I'd like to think that Martin Luther might have enjoyed that a little bit, perhaps. I don't know. He might not have done. But yeah, I think he would. He was a pretty decent monk when all things came down. Psalm 46, then. A favourite of anybody's? Anyone like Psalm 46? It's one of my favourites. I have 150 favourite psalms, but it is one of them. Psalm 46. You remember, some of you, and we have talked about this before, one of the most famous broadcasts of the 20th century on radio, long before TV and cinema, well, cinema was going, but TV hadn't really got going, 1938, on the radio, on BBC, Orson Welles did a version of The War of the Worlds. Wasn't around at the time, and even if you were, you might not remember it. But it was such a realistic dramatization. It caused over a million Americans, it wasn't the BBC, it was America, it was a million Americans panicked because they thought it was actually happening, that the planet had been invaded by extraterrestrial beings, by Martians. Hundreds of thousands of people threw bread and blankets and babies into cars and fled. If you've ever seen the modern version of War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise, it kind of that kind of scene, people just packing up and going. That's what was happening, 1938. Some even hallucinated. They could see flames and feel the heat of the fires that they thought were engulfing New York. And it was all just a play on the radio. Not as well known as that, but something similar happened in Britain, this time a bit earlier, in 1926. This was on the BBC, a radio drama. It was meant to be funny. It was a bit of a kind of satire at the time, but people incredibly took it very seriously. An Anglican clergyman called Father Robert Knox had written a play called Broadcasting from the Barricades, and it was on at 7:40 on Saturday, January the 16th, 1926. There was an introduction that made it very clear this is a work of fiction, but then it very cleverly kind of used bits of dramatic stuff with actors, with some very realistic sounding news broadcasting. Of course, the BBC was known for that. There was little snippets from a test match, and things like that. And interspersed were reports of a mob running riot through the streets of London, led by Mr. Popplebury. He was the secretary for the National Movement for Abolishing Theatre Queues. I mean, how you can get this confused, I don't know, because that sounds funny to me, but there you go. Anyway, it was describing the fact that the National Gallery was being ransacked at the time, and government buildings were being attacked in Whitehall, and that people throwing bottles at ducks in St. James's Park and all sorts of things. And the Houses of Parliament was under siege. And then it announced that Big Ben's tower had fallen down. And Mr. Wotherspoon, the Transport Minister, had been hung from a lamppost in Vauxhall. And at this point, all over the country, there was panic. People thought, seriously thought, civil war had broken out. Police stations were besieged. People fainted. The wife of the Lord Mayor of London was greatly upset because she couldn't get in contact with her husband to inform him of, quote, the rising tide of red revolution in the streets of London. We can laugh about it now. We weren't there. But for the people involved, there was a very real fear in those moments that the world was falling apart. The world has come to an end. Now, without being political, there are people around today who are just wondering what the future is for various parts of the world, including our own, with lots of uncertainty around. It's a very real thing, isn't it? This fear. What if the world should collapse? What if our way of life should collapse? We have a few moments where two electricity generating things go off for a moment, and the national grid has to cut electricity, and people are up, what's going on? A momentary blip. But then people start to think, well, what if that happened more permanently? What will we do? Our way of life begins to fall apart. It's very easy to evoke fear in the minds of people. It's not hard to scare people, and that includes ourselves sometimes when we start to think along these lines. And for most of us, it's not just the fears that are out there, what's going to happen, revolutions, wars, and so on, or even thunderstorms and floods. And we've seen a bit of that, or the threat of it at least. It's our inner fears as well, isn't it? It's the things that get us inside as well as outside that can rage and hold us hostage and prevent us from living. What are the top 10 fears? It depends what you look at, doesn't it? But one list I looked at said the number one is speaking to a group. So I'm terrified at the moment. Help! In fact, one I don't struggle with for some reason. I don't understand why, because I quite prefer to sit in a corner with a book, but there we are, that's me. But a lot of people, nearly half of people interviewed, said that would be a top fear for them, having to stand in front of a group of people and speak. But then there's lots of other fears. There's heights. There's insects. Financial problems. You could go on, couldn't you? Or you could tell me some of yours, perhaps. We're coming to it, Anne. Patience, patience. We're going to get there. I have to paint the picture first. Because that's what Psalm 46 does. It gives us that picture, doesn't it? We're going to go through it in a moment just with two or three points from it. It talks about the world falling apart. You know, the whole thing in tumult. One of the great tragic marks of life in a fallen world is that because we are now not naturally in the presence of God and the peace that was created in that sort of Genesis story in the Garden of Eden, that relationship we have with the Father, it's fallen down. One of the hallmarks of our experience of life is fear and anxiety. We live with it. In fact, one of the first things that Adam said to God, one of the very first things he said after God had found out that they'd taken the fruit of the tree, Adam said to God in Genesis 3, I heard you in the garden and I was afraid. Why is he afraid of the one who loves him and the one who's made him? We've fallen out of relationship. Sin enters our world, but fear enters our world. And many, many of the Psalms urge us, in the face of that, to trust. Trust isn't an easy thing. It's not a thing that comes naturally to us. It's not something that, we are geared up for. We have to work at it. And that's why so many of them encourage us to do exactly that. We need to work at it a bit. They encourage us in a world of fear that we trust God. And that's exactly what Psalm 46 does in three verses. There are three verses to the psalm. It's not broken up like that normally, but you can see three distinct verses. It's one of the songs of Korah, for the sons of Korah, if you read the top of it there. Here we go. Three things then, quickly. One, first stanza. This is what the first verse is all about, when the world shakes. When the world shakes. It's verses 1 to 3, of the psalm. Verses 1 to 3 is talking about the shaking of the earth. God is our refuge and strength. We will not fear. What though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the hearts of the sea, the waters roar and foam, the mountains quake with their surging. The picture is dramatic. It's deliberately so. Everything can crumble in your life and my life, outwardly and inwardly, but God will remain solid and firm and faithful and sure and dependable. He's our strength, our refuge, always found, ever present in trouble. So here's the thing that will vary throughout our life, our troubles. And some of you here are going through troubles that I've never experienced, possibly never will. And others of us are going through different kinds of troubles. And sometimes at this point in my life, I'm facing these kinds of troubles. And at that point in your life, you're facing those kinds of troubles. It's variable. Pretty constant in terms of having something to worry about. But just what it is will vary enormously. That's the thing that varies. Here's the thing that doesn't vary, that is absolutely constant and sure: God himself. Today, it might be stress at work. Tomorrow, financial problems. Might be serious illness. It might be friends who turn out not to be friends. It might be family problems. But every day, God is our refuge and strength, ever present. So it may be earthquake and storms and thunderstorms and the damage that we see sometimes now through the wind. We've had a bit of it, not terribly bad, but that bit of taster of that kind of wind and the flood with the dam and so on, not quite holding, and the fear of all of that. It might be big things like that, or it might be things that are happening to us. Do you remember a few years ago, January 2013 it was, there was a story that came out of Australia in Denali, Tasmania. It was a family called the Holmes family who lost three houses, three generations, and they lost three houses to fires, Australian bushfires. And it was a story, it became a story because grandparents were taking care of five grandchildren, all under 11. Mum and dad had gone off to a funeral and left their five grandchildren with the grandparents. And the fires struck. And the pictures that the grandfather took during that whole thing made it around the world, because the only place they could find to shelter from the flames, and you see the pictures, it's just orange. The whole background is orange, but down under a jetty, which was near the grandparents' house, a jetty out into the water, and for 3 hours, the five children under 11, three of them couldn't swim, and the two grandparents huddled together, sheltering under the jetty, neck deep in cold water, with a kind of tiny bit of just above the water where the air wasn't that toxic. The rest of it was just filled with smoke and all sorts of things going on, trying to keep these five children's heads above water. And the pictures were so, so dramatic. They never feared for their safety, they said. There was a beautiful calm throughout the whole experience. We prayed for safety and God's saved us. They were Christian people, all members of the family, mum and dad as well, who must have been out of their minds with worry when they heard what had gone on. But they prayed and they trusted God. But then the jetty caught fire. And they knew they needed the jetty to survive. And Grandfather Holmes used his hat to attack the flames on the jetty. And eventually, thankfully, the fire front passed and there was enough of it still left for them to cling on to. And eventually, there was a dinghy and they got to the shore and everyone was safe. Throughout that ordeal, millions upon millions, tens of millions, probably hundreds of millions of hits now on the on YouTube to see the reports of this. Not just because of those remarkable pictures, but of their confidence in God. And it's like that jetty was, for them, the covering of God in that situation. A sort of symbol, if you like, of the protection of God for them in their dilemma, in their tragedy. Which, well, it wasn't a tragedy, but it so easily could have been. The mountain shaking powerfully, being tossed into the sea itself running wild, yet God is our refuge. If you can imagine them huddling there, what a picture. God is saying to you and to me, right now, I am your refuge and your strength. I'm that jetty for you. Whatever you're facing, it may not be Australian bushfires. I think it's highly unlikely in Faversham on a Sunday morning to be Australian bushfires. But God is our security. You can huddle here. You can be safe. You can be secure with me. So that's the first of our three stanzas this morning. When the earth shakes, when everything goes wrong, God is there for us. How about the second stanza? When nations rage. The second stanza is 4-7, verses 4-7. There is a river. It's gone now. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. And it goes on. Nations in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. God of Jacob is our fortress. Hey, what a change of mood. What a change of mood. If Psalm 46 was a symphony, then the first movement was a loud movement. Crashing drums and cymbals, violins playing full, trumpets and trombones blasting out full throttle, conductor wildly waving. The mountains shake, the waters foam. But then in the second stanza, it's a bit quieter. The conductor has called a stop. We hear gentle flutes and violins softly strumming. The harps are delicately plucked. The mood has changed. And now we think in the midst of chaos, about the strong and secure city of God. There is a river, not a raging torrent, but a gentle pastoral scene, the river of God, a peaceful flowing river. Of course, we've said there is no river running through the streets of Jerusalem. This is poetry, but it's a picture of peace and prosperity. Water brings life. It's a picture of the Lord watching over his people, but also meeting the needs of his people. Around them, nations rising and falling, raging and toppling. The context is hostile still, angry, yes. It's kind of like the world, isn't it, when we look at our nations and falling out with one another. But this city, in the heart of everything, it's at peace. Where do we find peace? It's peace with God that really matters. God is in the midst. She will not fall. She will not be affected by any of these things. It's amazing when you meet people, isn't it, who are like that, who actually, even though they're facing the same kind of stuff that we all face, they're able to demonstrate that they have trust in God to meet their needs. And we can all be like that. There's no we could never do it. We can. It's not about us. It's about God. It doesn't say, I'm in the midst there. It doesn't put my name or your name in it. It doesn't matter that we're in the picture or not. We are. But what really matters is that God is there. And that's why it's so important that we spend time in our lives making time for God. Because we will rage. We'll be just swept away by everything if we don't allow God the time and space to give us that we need and supply it to us. Heard about a remarkable story of John Patton, who went to Vanuatu, went to the New Hebrides, when was it? The end of the 19th century, just into the beginning of the 20th century. He went there because he wanted to share the love of Jesus. And he had 40 years of incredible hardship. He lost one wife, two children. He was struck down 14 times with fever. The people that he lived amongst were fierce. Many were cannibals. Again and again, his life was under threat. But he built orphanages and eventually saw people become Christians and live a much more peaceful life. He wrote a diary. Let me read you a quick bit from the diary. A wild chief followed me around for 4 hours with his loaded musket. And though often directed towards me, God restrained his hand. I spoke kindly to him and attended to my work as if he had not been there, fully persuaded that my God had placed me there and would protect me till my allotted task was finished. Wow. I admire that man's trust in God, don't you? Here's another one. One morning at daybreak, I found my house surrounded by armed men, and a chief intimated that they had assembled to take my life. Seeing that I was entirely in their hands, I knelt down and gave myself away, body and soul, to the Lord Jesus for what seemed like the last time on earth. They didn't kill him. Here's another one. My heart rose up to the Lord Jesus. I saw him watching the scene. This is another time when they were threatening him. My peace came back to me like a wave from God. I realized that I was immortal till my master's work with me was done. The assurance came to me as if a voice out of heaven had spoken that not a musket would be fired to wound us, not a club prevail to strike us, not a spear leave the hand, not an arrow leave the bow, or a killing stone the fingers, without the permission of Jesus Christ, whose is all the power in heaven and on earth. He rules all nature, animate and inanimate, and restrains even the savage of the southern seas. Or in the words of Psalm 46, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. You know, we have many fears, and amongst them a fear of death. A lot of Christians struggle with that and then feel that we shouldn't struggle with it. Well, we don't need to. We take all of these things to Jesus. We allow God to be our refuge and our strength in all times of trouble. And that includes when we're frightened about our physical mortality. Just remember, you are immortal until God has finished with you, as John Patton says. And then there's more glory to come. Lastly and quickly, the third stanza, come and see, verses 8 to 11. Come and see. Come and see what the Lord has done. The desolations he's brought on the earth. He makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. He could have talked about how the earth trembled and Jericho's walls came tumbling down, or the mountains toppled to the sea, the waters of the flood covered the earth in the Old Testament, how the waters roared as Moses parted them, how God gave David victory over his enemies. He could have talked about any of that. But actually, he starts to look forward and not back now. He looks forward, and like Martin Luther King, the psalmist had a dream of what will be, a time when everything is put right, a time when we don't need to have these fears raging in us. And he invites us to come and see so that we can, in the present, exercise that sense of peace and calm. It's like bringing a bit of the future into now and living in that moment. This great God, amidst the devastation of the earth, will one day make war cease, shattering the spear, the chariot, disarming the bomb, grounding the drone, silencing the automatic weapon. It's a dream that we all dream of. And then he says, be still and know that I am God. Probably the most misunderstood and misquoted verse in the Bible. I've said this before, but I need to say it again. We often mean, let's just quietly, because that's what it says, be still and know that I am God. We think it's God talking to our anxious hearts, wrapped up in our busy, frenetic lives. He's saying, chill out, stop talking, start listening, take a spiritual sabbatical, find me in the quietness of your soul. And listen, that's not a bad thing. That really isn't a bad thing. That's a good thing. And other bits of the Bible actually would encourage us to do exactly that. Please don't let me stop you from doing that. But that's actually not what this says and not what this means. It's not what Psalm 46:10 means. God is speaking to the nations caught up in wars and aggression and self-aggrandizement. He's speaking to the leaders of our nations. He's speaking to those of us who would argue and fight and fall out. And he said, that's it, it's enough. Stop now, stop. Be still. And the way I usually say this, and I've done it before, is we had a maths teacher. And he was a little Irish chap. And when we got too noisy in the classroom, he would get up onto the table, stand up on his chair, and then get onto the table at the front and say, quiet! And there was, because we knew then we'd pushed it a bit too far. And this is that moment in Psalm 46 where God is saying, quiet! Enough! Enough of your raging, enough of your madness, enough of your selfishness, enough of your ambition simply to put you, your nation, your kind, whatever it is, first and above all else. That's enough. Not another sound. And what the psalmist is saying is there will come a time when God says enough. He's waited long enough. And of course, many of us say, Lord, why not now? Why don't you do that now? Lord Jesus, why don't you return now? And the answer the Bible gives to that is that God is patient. He doesn't want people to perish. He doesn't want people to be lost, because at that moment, we lose our ability to choose anything anymore. It's all decided and done for us. And there are so many people who will be perishing in that moment because they have nothing to trust in apart from themselves. And it won't be enough. This is the scene that we are to picture. The day will come when God says to all of us, the warring nations, the Syrians, the Iraqis, the Ukrainians, the Afghans, yes, British too, Americans, all of us, enough. I will destroy the weapons of your warfare, and the things that call you fear, I will remove forever, for always. All these things. And then you'll know I'm God. You'll know it. You won't just have to trust me for it. You won't just have faith for it. All will know. Everyone will know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations and among the earth. It's a wonderful psalm. I don't know about you. It's easier to sing it like we did earlier on than to believe it and put it into practice for my life, for your life. It's not the external dangers that really get me so much as the internal ones. What about you? Yes, global warming. Yes, terrorism. But what about the stuff that's going on inside? Private fears. What will people think of me? What if the doctor rings and gives me bad news from that blood test? What about the fears I have for my children? or my parents, or whatever it is. This psalm doesn't promise an end to all those troubles now. There will be an end when Jesus comes again and makes wars cease. But it does promise us a helper in the midst of troubles. It doesn't mean the musket will never fire, or the spear will never be thrown, or the arrow never released. But it does mean that even it's in the midst of that, our God is with us. The Bible is wonderfully honest. Life is tough, and it will continue to be tough. Serving Jesus is tough. But God is with us, working all things together for our eternal good. If you just, for one last moment before we finish, try wrapping your head around possibly the context of Psalm 46. We don't know for sure. The backstory is possibly this. The nation of Judah is under siege by the Assyrians. The walls are surrounded by brutal warriors who are known for skinning alive anyone they captured. Imagine that's what you're facing. All right? Fear? Afraid? A little bit, maybe? King Hezekiah, he's out of his mind. He doesn't know what to do. And then the psalm, trust in God. Be still and know that I am God. I'm going to fight this battle for you, and he does. And there's many scholars who think King Hezekiah, after all this had died down, and they were okay, he took the whole nation outside the walls of Jerusalem. And he said, come, behold, the works of the Lord. He makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. Be still and know that I'm God. I need this hymn, don't you? I need this hymn. I need it today. I need it this week. When things are particularly bad, I need it. Martin Luther did as well. He wrote that version of the hymn. There were hard times for Luther. Many wanted his head. Many wanted him dead. And when things were particularly bad, he would turn to his friend, Philip. I can never say his name. Melanchthon. Philip. Phil. He turned to Phil, and he would say to his friend, come on, Philip, let's sing the 46th. He was German, so he probably wouldn't have said it in that very British way, but that's kind of what he was saying. Let's come and sing the 46th. And Luther said, we sing this psalm for the praise of God because God is with us and powerfully and miraculously preserves and defends us and his word against all fanatical spirits, against the gates, the very gates of hell, against the implacable hatred of the devil, against all assaults of the world, the flesh, and sin. Whatever you're facing, let me encourage you, sing the 46th. A mighty fortress is our God, a stronghold never failing. Helper amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also. The body they may kill, but this truth, God's truth, is with us still. His kingdom is forever. We're going to spend a few moments worshiping, just gently, and praying and responding. And I'm going to encourage you to, rather than just rush out or even grab a coffee, which we'll do in a little moment or two, but 10, 15 minutes or so, we just want to have a moment when, using the words of songs, or if you want to, prayer, and if you want someone to pray with you, there are other folks around who will be delighted to pray with you, I am quite sure. It may be that you are suffering with something now that you're carrying and you'd like someone simply to pray with you. Don't be afraid of asking someone. You don't even need to tell them it with great detail. Just say, yeah, I am. I'm anxious and I'm afraid. Just please pray with me that I know the peace of God. Help me by praying with me that I might trust him for this thing. Should we do some of that? Because you can hear this stuff and not act on it. Our response is important. So we're going to sing together just for a moment or two. First one, I think we'll stay seated as we sing this.